Hey everybody, this is Emma from The Big Bellied Yogi, a podcast that shows you that it is possible to follow your dreams, be active, and be healthy at any size. As a yoga teacher who dares to show up in life in a larger body, I'm keen to share my life experiences, expert research, and practical lifestyle and fitness tips so you can feel comfortable in your body, no matter your size. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello, hello. It's Emma here and welcome back, or welcome for the very first time to my podcast, The Big Bellied Yogi. So as this episode is published, this weekend is my 49th birthday. And I thought it was a really good time to sort of talk about menopause, because not only am I a postmenopausal woman, I had a really early menopause at 43 due to surgery, but I know that a lot of women that listen to the podcast or come to my classes and those kind of things are around that age, you know, who might be leading into menopause or are, you know, right in the thick of perimenopause or are experiencing postmenopausal things as well. So I don't know, I'm sure you know this, right? But we spend a big chunk of our lives in premenopause. So that's before anything to do with menopause is happening. And that's when we are in a fertile state. That's probably a really complicated thing to say, because often people are in the fertile years. They're not postmenopausal or menopausal, but they can't be fertile for lots of different reasons. But I guess for the purposes of what I'm trying to talk about, it's those years where in general women are fertile. Then we get into perimenopause, and peri means sort of around. So it's around the time that menopause is going to happen. But perimenopause can last for up to 10 years. So the average age of menopause is around 51, 52, but people can start to experience menopausal or perimenopausal symptoms and problems right from their early 40s. And some people, you know, even more from their late 30s. So this is a period of life that can make a big difference to women's confidence and can make a really big difference to women's lifestyles and health and weight. And so it's a long period of time too for a lot of women. So I think it's really important that we do talk about it. I think, you know, it's sort of shoved in a corner a lot of the time and or sort of laughed off, or, you know, people make jokes about themselves feeling a bit crazy. I'm a crazy bitch now, or something horrible like that about themselves. But it's something that happens to, you know, most women. Most women experience some sort of change in their life, in their lifestyle, besides the actual stopping of their periods. So that's what menopause means, is that the periods stop. So technically you experience menopause on the day that it's 12 months after you've had your last period, and then you instantly are postmenopausal. So we talk a lot about menopause, but really menopause is a moment in time, and then everything else is either perimenopause or postmenopause. Have I said menopause enough yet? I feel like I have. Anyway, so I think the first thing I want to talk about is, you know, I've said perimenopause can last for up to 10 years. So let's say you're turning in your early 40s and you've started to notice some changes. So what we see a lot is that people's bodies change. And the reason for that is, over time, over this perimenopausal time, the amount of estrogen that's being produced by our ovaries starts to reduce, and it actually fluctuates a lot. So that can cause a lot of issues for symptoms that come and go, and it can, you know, really impact, you know, your mood. And, you know, that really fluctuating kind of feeling you're getting around this time is because your estrogen's actually, you know, coming and going. But what happens is, as we reduce the amount of estrogen that we produce, where we store fat on our bodies starts to change. So for most women, because of estrogen, when they start to store fat, it's usually around sort of their bottom and their hips and that kind of area. So it sort of creates that pear-shaped experience. But once you start to reduce the amount of estrogen that you're producing, then the fat storage starts to happen more on the abdomen. And I think it's really interesting to look at men, right? Men don't produce as much estrogen as women, of course, and they tend to put their weight on their tummies. So you can sort of see that as women reduce the amount of estrogen they're producing, a lot of the time the weight will produce more on the tummy and actually on the chest. And you can also, you know, for want of a better word, you can see men who put on weight will put it on their chest too. We talk about man boobs, and also on our backs. So this can feel really hard for women because, you know, for all their life, they might have experienced a flatter tummy than they are currently. We live in a world where the flat tummy is, you know, really worshipped and craved and desired. So, you know, when you start to put weight on around the tummy area, it can feel really, really uncomfortable. And it can feel uncomfortable for two reasons. One is the physical discomfort. Obviously, clothes will start to change, you know, the size that you're wearing will start to change, maybe different shapes of clothing become more flattering or less flattering. But also there's the physical element. I've noticed with my own body change throughout this menopausal period that, you know, when I'm doing yoga, for instance, forward folds are harder, or if I'm trying to do a sit-up, my belly gets in the way, you know, so like, or bending down to pick something up, my belly might get in the way. So there's that physical side of discomfort, but there's also definitely this mental discomfort because you know, we're already faced with being told that older women aren't attractive, and then you add on this belly, which is also not attractive in, you know, traditional senses. That can feel really hard. That can really feel like this double whammy of not being attractive anymore, or not being as attractive as you once were. So it's really difficult. Then we sort of have this third element that's put on around weight gain around the tummy, and you know, studies say that this is the worst kind of weight gain because it can create problems for like cardiovascular health and other problems. But I want you to keep in mind that a lot of these studies that sort of talk about weight and health, they don't factor in things like how weight stigma can affect people's health, how their socioeconomic background can affect people's health, whether people are doing the same amount of exercise and all those kind of things. So I'm not disregarding the studies that say that having more weight on your tummy can influence your health outcomes, but I think that we're not factoring in everything when we make that decision, because it might be related to the stress you feel about having a bigger tummy that impacts your heart health, for instance, and that's kind of not studied. And, you know, it might be because you feel heavier, because your body shape's changed, you feel less likely to go to a gym or to do exercise because you feel embarrassed about your body. And maybe that's not factored into those studies either. So just keep that in mind, right? So what I want to say to anyone who's perimenopausal or postmenopausal, or if today's the day that you're menopausal, today's the day it's been 12 months, I just want to say that you're not alone to feel disappointed around your body. And the reason you feel that way is a lot to do with diet culture and the thin ideal and the patriarchy kind of making us feel like we need to look a certain way to be attractive, and we need to be attractive to be worthwhile, to be listened to be, you know, an important part of society. And so it's understandable to feel upset about your body. And, you know, I don't see a lot of these ads on social media because, as I said in last week's episode, I've curated my social media, so I don't see a lot of this. But I know that there's a lot of advertising out there about how to bust your belly and how to fix your menopausal body. And, like, you know, there's a lot of kind of shame around it because not only does it feel bad internally to yourself, but you're being told by society that it's no good and you need to change it as well. So I really want to talk about how do we deal with this change in our bodies? You know, how do we come out the other side? And particularly, you know, from my perspective, from my anti-diet perspective, how do we live with this bigger body? You know, because God forbid, like, you know, you're in your 50s usually when you get into menopause. Do you really want these next 20, 30 years of your life, 40 years maybe, to be all about your weight, to be all about dieting, to be all about counting your calories and making sure that, you know, you're looking a certain way? Like, wouldn't you prefer to be just really happy with who you are? That's what I'd prefer for myself, and that's what I'd prefer for you. But I can understand why it doesn't feel possible right now. So I really want to talk about what we can do to help ourselves feel better throughout this process. So the first thing I want to talk about is probably the hardest thing, to be honest, and that is to accept that your body is changing and that changes to your body are natural. Now, how does that make you feel? Like, I know for some people, there's an instant sense, or not, maybe not instant, but there is that a sense of relief eventually. It's like, okay, all right, I don't have to do anything to change my body anymore because there's not much I can do to change it. So there's a sense of relief. And then a bit later on, there's a sense of grief. There's like, if I accept the way I am right now, that means I'm never going to have that body I've always dreamed of. So I understand that too. That's hard. And as a person who has been talking about body love or body acceptance or body respect for a number of years, I still have moments where I'm like, oh, why can't I look like I used to? Or why can't I have the body that I want? It's natural to feel that way because we are surrounded by these messages that tell us we should look a certain way. Otherwise, we mustn't be healthy, or otherwise, we're not attractive. But really, the first thing you need to do is accept this. And accept it for two reasons. One, because it's true, everyone puts on a bit of weight. Around the menopausal time. When I say everyone, I should say a lot of people do. It's expected that you will. And so why fight something that's going to happen anyway? But secondly, as I mentioned, why like spend your years now trying to change yourself? So that's probably the hardest thing. I think the second the hardest thing that's really important for your body right now is to get really good sleep and really good rest. And I think once we get to this kind of age, and I know that I'm not in my 50s yet, I'm only 49, but I think when we get to this point in our lives, we've got some really deeply entrenched ideals around how much we want to get done in our day and how productive we can be and how perfect we can be. And, you know, we come up with all these ideas of I'm going to start this new fitness routine, or I'm going to start this new way of eating, or I'm going to start writing my book, or I'm going to start doing this. And a lot of us at this age are kind of like, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it perfectly. And then we don't do it perfectly because life gets in the way and then we beat ourselves up. Does that ring true for you? So, if it does ring true for you, I would like to offer you this perspective that it's been diet culture that's been one of the things that have made us feel this way. Because for most of our lives, we've been told if you follow this diet to a T and you do these exercises perfectly, you will get this result. But if you miss a day or if you stuff up in any way, that's why you didn't get the result. Now, both of those things are bullshit. You know, like, even if you followed someone else's exercise and diet program, does not necessarily mean you're going to get those results, because you have a different body to them. You've had different life experiences. You have different genetics. You have different, you know, stress levels, all that stuff. So you can't guarantee that. So it's really hard when we've been told these messages all our lives to stop feeling that way. But we do need to learn that it's okay to rest. And it's okay not to do something every day. And it's okay that sometimes we're gung-ho and sometimes we're not. That's how life works. So that's kind of the second thing, is accepting that and allowing yourself the time to rest, to recover, to do nothing. And that it's okay if you're not doing it perfectly. So both these things, accepting the way your body is and, you know, trying to change this mindset of go, go, go all the time, they're both hard things because we've been hardwired against those things for our whole lives. And it's more of those, both of those things are more of a mental game. You know, it's more about changing the way you think rather than doing anything specifically different. The third thing, and I promise you, I did quite a lot of research before I started recording this podcast, and when I look up stuff about menopausal women, the third really important thing is to not go on a diet. Please just don't do it. I'll talk a bit more about food in a second, but don't go on a calorie deficit diet. Because not only does it affect your muscle mass? So usually when you go on these kind of crash diets where you lose a bit of weight quite quickly, you're not usually losing fat per se. You're losing, more likely to be losing, your muscle mass. And your muscle mass is what makes you have higher metabolism. And when we're getting into our 40s and 50s, we're losing muscle mass anyway. That's an aging thing. So when we go on these crash diets and we lose even more weight, which tends to be muscle mass, then we're slowing our metabolism down even further. So that's really important to remember. And you can't choose what weight you're going to lose, by the way. Your body chooses for you because it's a well-oiled machine that knows what it's doing. And so the easiest weight for you to lose when you're losing weight fast is muscle mass, not fat. So think about that. The second thing about going on a calorie, you know, deficit diet, like a crash diet, is that it affects your hormone levels, which have to do with your hunger and fullness. So it'll affect your leptin, which is an important weight management element. So when our leptin is out of whack, and this is what happens when you go on a diet, you will actually end up more hungry because leptin increases hunger, and it'll slow down your metabolism as well. So not only are you slowing down your metabolism because you're losing muscle mass, you'll be slowing down your metabolism because your leptin's been affected. So you've got this double whammy of your metabolism slowing, which is what's happening anyway because your muscle mass is decreasing because you're aging anyway. So it actually ends up doing the opposite of what you want when you go on a calorie deficit diet, because in the long run, or in the medium run, I should say, you might lose some weight to begin with, but then your metabolism slows down and you get more hungry, you eat more, you put on more weight because your metabolism slowed down. So please don't go on a diet. And I know if you're putting on weight, the first thing you want to do is go on a diet. But it's counterintuitive, I know, but that's the last thing you should do. So, what should you do instead? How can you help your metabolism? How can you change the way your body's functioning in a more positive way? So one is to move your body and to exercise regularly. And I would recommend that you do some cardio every week because that's a metabolism boost. But when I talk about cardio, I'm not talking about things that are going to make you feel exhausted by the end. I mean just things like going for a nice walk or, you know, this morning with my Self-Love Health Club crew, we did 10 sun salutations in a row, yoga sun salutations, and we were puffed. Well, I was puffed because I was talking cueing the poses all the way through, but we got a bit sweaty, we got a bit puffed. You know, you can get some cardio out of yoga if you're doing the right things. Things like boxing can be a bit more fun. You know, you don't have to be jumping around all the time. I'm actually really excited because after years of really avoiding hardcore exercise, all I want now is my own spin bike. So I'm saving up for my own spin bike because in my head I'm like, I just want to get sweaty. And I haven't wanted to do that for years because I've had to repair my relationship with exercise. But I want to let you know that if you become more intuitive, if you stop going on these crash diets and crash exercise programs and start to just do things that feel like fun, one day you're probably going to want to do the stuff you hate the most right now because you'll remember those times when you used to enjoy them. So yeah, cardio. So do a bit of cardio, but I would focus a lot on your strength, your resistance training, building your muscle mass. And it also helps your bone density, which is really important around this time of life as well. So building your muscle mass, of course, will help to boost your metabolism too. So strength training can be body weight, it can be using weights, it can be using machines at the gym, the weight machines, I mean. And so there's lots of ways you can, and even some yoga's kind of body weight strength training or resistance training as well. So this is something that a lot of women really don't like to do because they don't see the benefits in terms of weight loss. But again, maybe counterintuitive, strength training will help with weight loss because it helps to boost the metabolism and it helps with that muscle mass build. You're not going to turn into Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way. You're not going to get fully, you know, cut and ripped from doing this. And you're not going to look bulgy. You're just going to get stronger. And you're going to improve your muscle mass. And if you're still weighing yourself, which I kind of wish you weren't, but if you are, you may see a bit of a change in the scales in that your weight's going up. And that's because muscle mass is, muscles weigh more than fat does. So if you're making more muscle, that means you are potentially going to gain weight. But that doesn't mean you're being unhealthy. That's actually supporting your body and helping to increase your metabolism and your bone density. Now, the last thing I would really highly recommend that you do in terms of moving your body is some sort of flexibility, stretching, yoga, because it's really important, especially as we get older, to help prevent injuries, help to prevent pain in our joints. But it also really does help with that mind, body, mental health benefits as well. The next thing I would really, really invest in at this time of your life is learning more about intuitive eating. Now, the reason I say that is because at this point in our lives, for so many of us, we've spent most of our life on diets or in and out of diets or thinking about eating well or watching what we're eating. And we've been denying ourselves food. and we've been restrictive, and we've really built up this relationship where we don't know how it feels to feel really full or feel really not full anymore. We just don't know. We just have no real relationship with food. And intuitive eating just allows you to be able to eat what you need to eat, be chill about it. Know that, like, you can have a few days in a row maybe where you don't eat particularly well for a number of different reasons, like you're unwell, or you've got a lot on at work, or the kids have got a lot on, or whatever. And then know and trust that your body will make up for it in the next few days after that. It's a huge game changer, because we are told with the diet culture world that, you know, every time you eat something in quotation marks bad, that makes you a bad person and you've ruined things. But you haven't, because it's just a blip in your whole life, you know. So if you eat well most of the time, having some cake once a week's not going to ruin things. And the mental health benefits you get from not thinking about food all the time, obsessing about food all the time, thinking you need to look a certain way all the time, are massive. So I'd really invest in learning about intuitive eating and getting that kind of mindset into your life. And the last thing, we talked a bit about this, but I want to be a bit more clear. We talked about rest, but I want you to think about sleep and prioritizing your sleep. And something I have to mention at this point is alcohol and sleep. Now, I've heard from my clients for many, many years that, especially as they're getting into perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause, is that alcohol really affects their sleep. You know, it really creates that 3 a.m. wake up hot, can't get back to sleep, mind's churning kind of thing. And I've experienced that too. And I think that a lot of people know, it's not a secret, like I've given up alcohol because that's what's best for me. I really did have a bit of a problem with it. And so, you know, my sleep, I remember the 2019 was a year where I just spent the whole entire, it felt like the whole year, I was up all night not sleeping. I was anxious, I was stressed, I was hot. My heart was beating faster, my stomach was churning, and I was drinking too much. And all of that was affecting my sleep. Now, I'll be really honest and say that I had an underlying thyroid problem that I didn't know about, which was causing a lot of that too, but the alcohol was not helping. And, you know, I can count on one hand, since I gave up alcohol at the beginning of 2021, how many times I've been up in the middle of the night with my brain just churning. It doesn't happen anymore. And that has a lot to do with not drinking. So I'm not saying you should give up alcohol altogether, but I think having some boundaries around it and really thinking hard about what role alcohol plays in your life is a really good thing to start thinking about at this stage in your life. So I hope this is helpful. I really want this to be a gentle sort of calling card for you to be able to accept who you are as you get older, and that includes your body, and respect your body for everything that it's done for you to this point in your life, and to really look after it with, you know, really lovely eating, gentle nutrition, with really great movement, with getting the rest that you deserve, and by getting really good sleep. And if you do need any support with this, my one-on-one coaching program is fantastic for this. It's a 6-month program. We go through all the stuff about diets and how to let go of them, but we also, you know, obviously you get access to my Self-Love Health Club, which is an online fitness program, which is all that exercise, the cardio, the strength, the flexibility. You get access to my intuitive eating course. You get support from me when it gets really hard, because it will from time to time. And if you do feel like you need that extra support with maybe looking at your alcohol consumption, like, I'm a very compassionate person when it comes to that, because I totally understand. And I have no judgment if you want to drink too, because I totally understand that it was me that had the problem, not you. So if you want to get more information about that, there'll be a link in the show notes. You can always just book in for a 15-minute chat with me to see if working with me one-on-one is right for you. So thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed and learned something this week, and I look forward to speaking to you next time. Take care. The Big Bellied Yogi is brought to you by me, Emma Paulette, an anti-diet personal trainer, health coach, and yoga teacher. Head over to emmapaulette.com to download your free intuitive movement workout kit.